close to you, that would limit your movements. I'm obviously quite useful in a stand-up fight, but not as much when we're talking about having to work in small spaces and being... quiet.
Okay, thank you, Yasha,
Gus said with a nod of his head.
I'll head down and in, take up one of their comm pieces and listen in for us. Maybe you'll get something.
Not a problem, Dunyasha said with a casual wave of her hand. A chair made of blood formed, along with a standing umbrella. Sitting down and crossing one leg over the other, she looked oddly comfortable. Heading for the hatch that would lead into the fort, he detached his mind partially from Dunyasha's. He didn't need much more than to monitor her to hear her if something went wrong. He certainly didn't need to share a space with her. Moving quickly, Gus had to get around the satellite dish. He had briefly considered smashing it, but that would actually alert them to his presence, and that wasn't something he wanted. Stopping suddenly in front of it, though, he reconsidered his options. Holding out his hand, he built up an ugly ball of horror magic at the center of the dish. Then, he tied it off, but kept it available to himself.
Somewhat like explosives. That'll work if I need things to go boom. It'll also cut communications, I imagine. We don't need any other guests joining the party. Not at all.
I'm not finding anything here, lamented Jill. They all just stay away from the castle and anyone who comes out of it. It's more or less viewed as a wizard's castle. Anyone who goes to it never comes back, and going anywhere near it'll get you struck down with lightning. Or, I suppose, a high-powered rifle round from that fort. The crack probably sounds like thunder.
Definitely the right place, then. Now, I just need to find him.
What if he's already gone?
Jill asked. Gus didn't know how to respond to that. He didn't even want to consider the possibility of Mark being dead. Losing Vanessa and his father had already been enough of a blow to him. If he lost Mark, the one person who wasn't family or in love with him but still accepted him, wanted him around, and was his friend, he didn't know what he'd do. Pulling open the hatch part of the way, Gus found he was looking into a very modern armory. Lockers, weapon lockers, and benches were all spread out within view. Slithering through the gap, Gus entered and closed the hatch behind himself. He was inside. Now, it was just a matter of finding Mark. Chapter 33. Falling Free. Looking around, Gus found it was more or less what he'd expected. It really was a deployment armory. Sniper rifles, body armor, lockers for people to store their belongings, a shower, restroom, and a small break room. Everything someone would need to be on a position for a long while, and be able to successfully rotate in and out of it.
Military base. That means I need to find the communication hub after I confirm Mark is safe. I'll need to disable the hub to get him out without anyone coming for us. Blowing up the dish is a great start, but there's probably a backup or a redundancy somewhere.
Standing there, he listened. He tried to smell if there was any fear. Then he made a soft, echoing pulse of psychic energy, copying what he'd learned from the mage to feel if there was anyone near. Except the pulse was so soft, it barely made it more than 10 feet from him. But that was perfect when he considered it. He didn't want to alert anyone to his presence, but he wanted to know if someone was near. All in all, he was fairly certain that he was alone. Quietly, he slunk to the door, popped it open a few inches, and peered out. He was looking at a stairwell that wound downward. There was no door or access to anything else from this point that he could see.
Roof is restricted access, maybe? Only specialized to certain people? If that's so, this'll lead down to a defensive area, I bet. Somewhere that people man and engage from, maybe? A security position? Just in case there's a rooftop insertion like what just happened?
Pushing the door open, Gus entered the stairwell. Looking down the center, he could see the bottom. There didn't appear to be any doors all the way down, just a never-ending staircase. Leaping over the top rail, he grabbed it and hung off with one foot. Contemplating how to make this work, Gus gave up and pushed off lightly. Grabbing the top rail of the stairs below and across from him, he got his foot to the floor of it, then pushed off again, back toward the other side. Moving down quickly and with very little noise, Gus went floor to floor. In less than 10 seconds, he reached the bottom with only a gentle pat of his clawed feet hitting the cold, tiled floor.
Huh. Mother was right. I was leaning too hard toward human.
Yes and no. Your human side is also you. It's your father and his restraint, his common courtesy, empathy, and care,
Jill cautioned.
Because if it weren't for your father, where would your mother be? Even now, we both know his words are resounding in her mind, and when her bloodlust is sated, she'll come home, only because of your father.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome. You're my favorite patient,
said Jill with a laugh.
I'm heading back your way. Nothing else to find here. I'll stop in and talk to Yasha. I'm very curious to see what she means by blood slave, and I don't want to go digging through your memories on that one. It has some dark feelings attached to it.
It's literally what it sounds like. Someone who gives their blood to a vampire in a slave-like fashion. She's offering the slave herself to me for my blood, turning the name upside down.
Oh, well, I didn't expect you to be so forthright,
Jill admitted. He got the impression she was rapidly flying towards the castle now. Exiting the stairwell, Gus found another door, one with a horizontal pushbar opening mechanism. Doors were rapidly becoming the bane of his existence. They were obvious indicators of something going on that shouldn't. Not bothering to think about it, he just pushed the door open slightly, with the least amount of pressure he could, letting it rest on the latch. Standing there, he waited. He didn't for a moment believe there weren't people on the other side. He could feel fear coming to him from deeper inside the fort. There was no guarantee it was from people close by, but he'd bet on it, and he was counting on the idea that he'd open the door enough to catch someone's attention. The door creaked and then shut itself, someone pushing it closed. Nodding his head, he was glad to have his theory confirmed. Waiting only a few minutes, he gently pushed the door open again until it rested on the latch once more. Responding much more quickly this time, someone came over and closed the door again. Smirking, Gus opened it a third time. The door was jerked open and held there. Standing in the doorframe was yet another soldier, one with an SMG pointing forward as if he expected someone to be there. Taking a step forward, the man peered into the stairwell. Using the opportunity, Gus stuck a needle of power into the man's brain. He knew very little other than his job, and right now, that was to guard this door. Using his horror magic, Gus laid a suggestion into the man's mind that someone was just around the corner, that they were waiting for him. He needed to be careful, to hold the door open so he could fall back, but also to peek around the corner. It was his job to clear the stairwell, after all. Grimacing, the man visibly experienced the thought as if it were his own. Pushing his back up to the door, he slowly eased forward to look around the corner. Gus slid past the soldier, taking the keys and keycards at his waist as he did so, bringing them into his personal camouflage bubble as he did it. Reaching up with a taloned finger, Gus lightly split the hinge pin off where it held the hinge together. With a bang, the door hit the ground and sat there, unmoving.
There. Now Jill can get in easily.
Sliding past the soldier who was now swearing at the door, his two companions sitting behind a machine gun, and then finally into the adjacent hallway, Gus felt pretty good. Checking each mind he passed, he found that almost every single person here was little better than a sadistic soldier. People who had committed one terrible act after another. Entering what appeared to be an assembly area, Gus considered what to do or where to go. He knew the general layout of the facility from the minds he'd wiped and those he'd just read, but he didn't actually know where Mark would be. No one had any idea about interrogation cells or prisoners. For all intents and purposes, this was an operations base, a jump point. Only recently had it become anything more than that, though none of those he'd scanned knew why. Of course, Gus did. Their operations were being hit so hard they were converting older locations. Scratching at his jaw, he considered what to do. He didn't feel like he had a lot of time, but he also needed information. Acting recklessly would be just as likely to get Mark killed as to free him. There was no guarantee there wasn't a kill-him-if-things-go-boom order that existed.
Security room, then.
The things every soldier he'd encountered had known were where not to go and where the security room was. Because while security was certainly a place not to go, it was also a location that they might be called to defend. Getting out of the assembly area, Gus started heading toward what he was almost certain was the security room, or at least a communication hub. In either case, he'd be happy to check the location and see if anyone knew anything. Not to mention, place a few more horror charges. If he had anything to say about it, this entire castle was going to go up in a nightmarish fear bomb of magic and death. There wasn't a great deal of movement going on in the fort. Everyone seemed to be where they needed to be. Trying to navigate around here without raising suspicion would be rather difficult, he imagined.
Good thing we don't have to be visible, murmured Jill. Just landed. Going to chat with Yasha real quick, update her and head down.
Gus was actually very thankful for Jill right now. Having someone who could actively participate with him was becoming something he didn't think he could do without. He had his support types with Serafina and Indali, his investigative types with Melody and Janelle. The one who kept the home fires burning and provided magical support and healing was Trish, and his sexy and convincing, if extremely deadly, infiltrator was Chloe. But there hadn't been anyone to get the dirty work done with him.
Don't forget Yasha. She's been very useful to us so far, and we can cloak her and bring her along easily,
Jill said, interrupting his thoughts.
Between the two of us, we can keep her well secluded, and she has far more combat ability than Mel, Trish, or Chloe.
What? Why are you arguing about this right now?
Because this is how we're going to arrange our expedition team, answered Jill. In the future, it'll be us three that get sent out for operations like this. Everyone has their own functions. Ours are combat-oriented with a slight investigative overlap.
I'm a very good
combatant. Mel can handle investigations and we can assist her, but it shouldn't be our focus. Do you really think anyone else in our group could do this?
Asked Jill. At the same time, he had a mental image of her literally crawling along the ceiling of an office he didn't recognize.
Now, hurry up and get in here. I've already double-checked the room, so we're clear of magical traps. Now I'm starting to go through people's minds. You're much better at this than I am, though, so come on already.
Confused at how Jill had gotten in front of him, Gus hurried up, only to end up stopped dead in front of a closed door. Truly the bane of his existence in these missions.
Sorry, can't help you. I went through the ceiling tiles. They're all movable, and there are steel supports in there. I just crawled through and exited into an empty break room, followed people in from there,
Jill explained. Wanting to growl and punch the door, Gus did something stupid. He reached up and knocked firmly on the door. He didn't have any other bright ideas, and this seemed the most likely to provide a result.
Did you just...
The door was pulled open partially, and several men with rifles charged out. They nearly ran Gus over in their haste to secure the doorway.
That was quite a response.
Yes, it was,
agreed Jill. Sliding between two of the soldiers, Gus made it through the doorway and into the security room. If he had any doubts about it being the right location to gather information, they were gone in a flash. There were a great many people here watching monitors, soldiers with weapons, as well as a number of radio operators off to one side.
Communications hub, drones, comms, data, and video feed.
Indeed. I was just working with the ones at the screens to weed them out. It takes a bit, and they're less likely to have information,
Jill said.
You can work on the officers and those in the back. They're clearly in charge, or at least, they're not nobodies.
Looking at the center of the room, he could see Jill hanging upside down by one hand and 2 feet. The other hand hung freely as she turned to look at the people below her. Her wings were spread, her hair slightly wild, and she looked every bit a very sexual and deadly predator. Gus was extremely attracted to her right now, looking at her in that way. As if feeling his eyes on her, Jill tilted her head around and looked at him upside down. Then she gave him a wide, toothy smile.
Later, lover. Later. Hunt now,
said Jill before turning back to those at the computers. While unable to disagree with her, Gus also didn't do exactly as she suggested. Instead, he began to place large, explosive charges of horror magic. Dotting them throughout the room, he made sure they were well camouflaged and buried. Computer systems, displays, equipment. He wasn't being stingy with his magic, because there was a good deal of fear emanating out of these people. Less so than normal people, but still more than enough to suit his purposes and feed him, keep him topped off. Only after laying a charge inside a massive hunk of electronics that he had no idea what it did he finally turn his attention to the individuals in the room. Trying to not waste any more time because Mark was depending on him, Gus started to push and pull his way through minds, sorting thoughts rapidly out into information that could be useful and things that weren't. It wasn't until he got to a man sitting at the back of the room at a desk by himself that he found what he was looking for. Information about Mark and his arrival. Several hours ago, a prisoner that was listed as extreme priority was rushed into the fort. They were bagged and unidentifiable in every way, to the point that they were rushed through at a sprint between a group of soldiers. All people from an elite tip-of-the-spear group that worked for the Council. Each and every one of them a boogeyman and special forces operator. Right through this very security room, into the elevator bay in the corner, a special key inserted, and down they went. The prisoner had been taken down into the depths of the fort to the lowest level, where prisoners that needed to vanish and never return were taken, where they would be questioned until they broke over a series of days. Another prisoner had been taken to a second location, and when the information from that interrogation came in, he was to bring it down. This man, a colonel, had been ordered to keep everyone out at all costs otherwise. As of yet, no one had reported in about Finn and her captors being neutralized, nor any information from her interrogation. Gus could use that as a way to get him down there to report in that they hadn't heard anything yet.
Got him. Bottom level. Elevator. I'm going to get this bastard over there and have him key it. We'll use him as a means to get down there. Hop to, my lovely dark one.
Laughing in his mind at the nickname, Jill casually let go of the ceiling with her feet and began swinging hand over hand toward the elevator. Her clawed fingers dug into the steel supports as she went. Gliding a thread of psychic power into the man's mind, Gus began to stoke feelings of insecurity. Fear that they hadn't heard from the group that was taking care of the second prisoner, that perhaps they should send a third team out to check on the other one, because if they were compromised, they should be ready for that. The colonel practically shot to his feet. His fear of being compromised was very real and very distinct. Gus had inadvertently struck a chord in the man's mind. Leaving his desk, he started walking for the elevator.
I'll be right back.
He said absentmindedly, almost as an afterthought, in fact. Heading straight into the elevator where Jill was already standing, the colonel pulled his key ring out of his pocket and hunted down the elevator key. Gus stepped into the elevator as the man stuck the key into the lock and turned it. Then the colonel tapped the button for the lowest floor while holding the key turned. With a ding, the elevator doors slid shut. Only then did the colonel turn the key back into its normal position and remove it. Swiftly, the elevator began to descend down into the depths of the fort.
Coming for you, Mark. I'm coming for you. Just need a bit longer, that's all. Then it's just a question of getting out of here.
Jill had crept up close to the man's side and used a talon to cut the key off his keyring, leaving only the upper fifth of it and the hole the keyring had been jammed through. Holding up the key, Jill gave him a wide smile, then slid it down her shirt and into her bra.
By the way, Mother said the increase in breast size is probably from becoming a full succubus. Not that I'm complaining, but you and I were both curious, so I asked her.
The aggression, fear, and pressure of the situation were mounting inside him, and Gus was feeling decidedly non-human at the moment, more like a predator finally getting downwind of his prey.
Mine,
Gus said as he stared hard at Jill.
I... well, of course they're yours, silly. I may be a succubus, but I'm your imp at the same time.
Jill said with a laugh.
Mine.
Jill's mind screeched to a halt at the absolute possession in his mental tone. His eyes were boring a hole through her head.
Yes, yours,
she agreed.
All yours.
Chapter 34. The Lost. With a ping that rapidly turned into a ringing alarm, the elevator doors opened. 3 seconds after it started, the alarm silenced itself. Standing in the middle of the elevator was the colonel, who'd raised his hands up to his shoulders. From what he could see of the situation from the colonel's mind, this was entirely within reason and expectation. The elevator exit was highly defended and lethally guarded.
Exit, please!
Called a voice from outside the elevator. Doing as ordered, the colonel exited the elevator and then came to a stop once again. Jill and Gus left the elevator as well, moving out to the sides of the narrow hall. Passing by a machine gun emplacement, Gus couldn't help but skim their thoughts as he went. He discovered that the machine gun was likely the least dangerous aspect of the checkpoint. There were also 2 mages defending it, as well as a psyker. Pausing, Gus turned up behind them.
Jill, you said you can use psychic powers now like I do. Did you have any ability before?
No, I'm pretty sure I just leached all this from you. Well, feeding on you. Both in the bedroom and the constant stream of magic you send me,
offered Jill.
Why?
Help me smother this person's mind and take it over. I want you to pilot them when we're done. Having him take out the 2 mages will work out very well for us, and I can put a bomb on his back as well.
Of course,
Jill replied, coming over to stand behind Gus. She casually wrapped an arm around his middle and peered over his shoulder.
Did you get taller?
Yes, I'm almost exactly your height now. I think I'm handling all these changes incredibly well. I know I'm compartmentalizing some of it for later and bottling up other bits, but I'm handling it all as best I can,
admitted Jill.
I'm not the woman I used to be anymore, at all.
You're doing fine, Jill. Far better than many soldiers I know.
Gus paused to consider how to attack the man in front of him. The planned assault started firing up his desire to destroy the fort once again. Putting his hand atop Jill's, he held it.
Mine.
Yes. Yours.
Jill agreed once more to his mental demand. He felt her mind shudder and then push deeper into his own while dragging him further into her own, giving herself completely over to him while also forcing him even deeper inside herself.
Go!
Gus felt Jill's mind alongside his own as they carved the psyker's mind in half, splitting it into 2 different battles, which wasn't to say the psyker was weak. In fact, the man was so strong that Gus had a momentary flash of panic when he realized this person was likely as strong as Kit, or nearly so. Dodging psychic jabs inside the man's mind, Gus tried to counter, throwing a pinpoint accurate strike at the man's consciousness. A sleeping foe couldn't fight back, of course. Except the man was more skilled than Gus and neatly dodged the attack and returned it back to Gus, crossing the gap from his mind and into Gus's. That was where the battle ended, however. Like a light switch, the man ceased to exist. Jill had taken the opportunity during the man's attack on Gus to snip him clear of his own body, much as Gus had done to the snipers on the roof.
"Mine,"
Jill said, her fingers curling into Gus's shirt. It was a possessive growl backed by the same determination that had matched his previous statement.
"Yes."
He agreed with her sentiment wholeheartedly as he watched her set up shop in the man's head. Everything had happened in a second of time. Nothing outwardly had changed, but the psyker was no longer his own person. He was a puppet controlled by Jill. Holding up his hand, Gus put a fear bomb on the puppet's back, then pushed it into his chest. When it went off, it would kill the puppet and a number of people around him. Turning, the duo left the security checkpoint and headed deeper. There was only one prisoner down here, which meant finding Mark would be incredibly easy. Ghosting along the long hallway, the two of them found no other resistance. In fact, they didn't see anything. Reaching the only door at the end of the hall, Gus was nervous. He felt anxious and slightly jittery. This feeling didn't seem to have anything to do with finding Mark, however. He had the distinct impression there were others here. They just weren't visible to him.
"The other bogeys?"
Jill asked.
"I feel it too."
"Likely. I'm going to make a very faint pulse. If we sense one, attack him. Get him under control."
"I understand."
Coming to a stop, Gus started to prepare a short, small blast of psychic power. Since the other psyker was their puppet, he wouldn't be sensing anything. Jill's arm once more curled around Gus's middle. Letting go of the pulse, Gus instantly felt six people around them. They were spread out through the hall and were all focused on the colonel near the entrance.
"Left three are mine,"
Jill said before she attacked. Gus mentally dove at the three on the right. Two went down quickly under his mental barrage, knowing nothing other than their duty and job. Much like the boogeyman assassin Gus had turned over to Sam. The third had enough time to realize what was happening after defending themselves from the initial attack Gus had launched. The man's voice choked off on the first syllable as Gus squashed his mind flat, ripping right through the defense they'd managed to erect around their mind. A defense taught to them by the squad of anti-psychers that were working to break down the prisoner. People who were naturally predisposed to being unaffected by psychers and telepaths. Turning his focus back to Jill's attack, he found she was in the middle of draining the last boogeyman of his memories, until nothing remained at all of the man. All six were completely incapacitated and hidden behind magic that even Gus hadn't been able to penetrate.
"Huh, boogies can't spy on boogies?"
Jill asked.
"Apparently not."
Gus went to the door and eased it open.
"To believe that?"
asked a voice. He didn't recognize the voice, but that was irrelevant. If there were people back here, it was likely that Mark was as well.
"I couldn't care less if you believed it or not,"
replied a voice Gus knew very well.
"Mark!"
Rushing forward, Gus practically charged into the room, only to find that it had just a single occupant, a man sitting at a computer desk. They were looking at a monitor that showed a display of Mark sitting in a chair in the middle of a room. Seven people appeared to be spread around that room. The audio feed was coming through a set of speakers on the desk. Apart from that, the only feature of the room was a single light above and a door.
"No. No, no, no. He's gotta be behind that door. I'm going to—"
Before he could tear the door out, Jill slid past him, put a hand to his chest, and then looked at the man at the computer.
"Mark's in the other room. This man knows that. Be still. We only need to go through one more door. Calm. Think."
Jill turned and snared him with her eyes, gazing straight into his soul.
"Only one more door remains. Think rationally," Jill prompted. "Put a bomb on the computer. Less evidence."
Nodding his head, Gus felt like he'd somehow suddenly been grounded. The bolt of anger that had been boiling through him was released harmlessly into the ground beneath his feet. Reaching over, Gus put a fear bomb onto the computer tower itself, just as Jill had directed him. Standing up, the man suddenly came over to the door and knocked on it rather firmly.
I got it. We'll just do what you did earlier. Someone will come over to see what's up. I'm sure of it, Jill said.
Hey, get the door,
Mark said.
If that's a Girl Scouts, can you give me a box of Thin Mints? My wife literally ate all 7 of my boxes. 7! 7! How do you eat 7 boxes of Thin Mints? Or do you think she's lying to me and she just re-hit them somewhere else so she could eat them on her own? Oh my God, that's it, isn't it? She's playing me for a fool. Huh, I've been betrayed.
Just tell us where he is,
said one of the men in the room. At the same time, the door opened. Someone off camera had to come check on the knock.
What's up?
Whispered the man.
Check this out,
said the guard who'd been sitting behind the desk. He gestured to the computer at the same time as he held the door open. Taking the chance, as soon as the one who'd come to check entered the room, Gus went into the interrogation chamber. Jill was right behind him. This was indeed the room that had been on the camera, with Mark sitting in a chair in the middle of a room, a light above him that lit the circle around him and nothing else.
Look, you're better off playing that soundtrack from earlier. I really like track 4. She had a great voice,
Mark muttered.
I especially like when she whispered, "You failed us." Sounded a lot like ass. I bet she's got a great pair of lips on her.
Looking at his longtime and truest friend, Gus could see he'd been somewhat manhandled, but was in one piece. A black eye, slightly swollen lip, and blood coming from his nose, but nothing that looked life-threatening.
Your wife had a great pair of lips on her,
said someone else in the room. Mark went still, then slowly turned his head to look at the individual who spoke.
Oh, going to threaten me with your boyfriend again?
Asked the same individual.
It isn't a threat. It's a promise. And he isn't my boyfriend. Just my brother,
Mark said, his voice becoming still and calm. It had a certainty to it.
Gus will come. He'll show up, tear this whole place apart, and leave with me. And then he'll tell me my wife is safe, that my son, his godson, is perfectly fine, because Gus is my brother, and I love him and would do the same for him. So no, I won't threaten you with him. It's a promise. And when he does get here, it's gonna be absolutely hilarious to me.
As he spoke, Gus had moved off to the corner of the room where the man who'd spoken stood, while Jill took up a position in the opposite corner. Slowly, Mark turned back to the original interrogator and shook his head. Sparing a thought, Gus slid into Mark's mind. There, he found that Mark wasn't just boasting. He truly and absolutely believed Gus would just show up, though he did have some lingering fears for his wife. Any sane man would. So, Gus sent him a clip from his memory. It was Finn, looking quite safe and sound, getting into a very obvious moving truck and starting to pull away. A view that encompassed the bodies of soldiers that had been left on the ground, accompanied by the single thought that Finn wasn't just freed, but already safe and on her way to contact Melody. Then, Gus flipped to an image of Dunyasha sitting on top of the fort, surrounded by dead snipers and keeping surveillance on everything. A rapid flash of all the bombs that had been planted throughout the fort on their way in. And finally, it was followed by Gus's view of Mark's back sitting in the chair. Exactly what Gus saw right now. Real life, as of this very moment. In the corner, Jill could be seen crouched in a shadow just next to another soldier. Gus slowly looked at the soldier who'd spoken about Finn, and then disconnected himself from Mark's thoughts.
Oh,
laughed Mark, his voice taking on a crazed edge to it.
Oh, that's just the... Oh, that's the best. Oh, my goodness. What?
Asked Mark's interrogator as Gus received a mental impression of readiness from Jill.
It's actually hilarious. Truly hilarious. Oh, I was wrong. So very wrong.
Mark said with a hooting laugh.
Oh, and what were you wrong about?
Asked the leader.
I was wrong about my brother. So very wrong,
Mark said with a chuckle. Then he sighed, a long, drawn-out breath.
Oh, yeah, my brother's already here, and you're all dead, but you don't know it yet. Go!
Gus detonated the bomb on the computer at the same time he sunk his claws into the guts of the man in front of him, his hands dipping down deep to the point where his palms were gone. Ripping his hands left and right as the lights began to flicker in the room, Gus turned, stomped his foot down against the wall, and leapt to the other corner. Laughed Mark in an insane way, throwing his head back as he did so. The light above him bouncing wildly and flickering on and off. Before Gus could reach his next target, he saw Jill finish with hers and move in on the lead interrogator. Her hands were covered in blood up to her elbows. Landing atop the soldier, Gus went in low and then launched a headbutt at the man's nose, even as Gus raked him several times with his clawed hands. Mark's roaring laughter continued to fill the room as Gus took hold of the dying man by his shoulders and bodily hurled him across the room, right over the top of Mark and into the last soldier. Smashing into him at full speed, they both ended up in a heap on the ground. Jill took that as a reason to go that direction next and launched herself that way, her taloned feet pitting the ground and spraying small bits out behind her as she went. Landing atop the pile, she started throwing punches with her claws out, acting more like they were knives than hands. Gus went over to Mark and grabbed him up by the shoulder. Ducking in low, he pitched him over his shoulders, stood up, and started going for the door.
We're leaving.
All done here,
Jill responded, coming in behind him.
Oh, hello there. I'm Mark, Gus's brother and would-be husband, but he doesn't go that way.
Mark said, his laughter having finally died down.
You look lovely. Have we met before?
No, I'm his succubus,
Jill replied as they entered the computer room. Both men were down on the ground, unmoving. The computer was completely destroyed.
And his imp.
How interesting. I've never actually met a succubus or an imp, though I know of both,
Mark said in an incredibly conversational tone.
Killing the puppet.
Okay, I just made him hug both mages.
Gus detonated the bomb inside the psychic puppet, which was much more powerful of an explosive than Gus had expected.
Oh, leave it to Gus to add a succubus to his harem,
sighed Mark loudly.
Oh, I'd be so deep in women.
Would you? Oh, I don't think so,
Jill countered as they moved through the hall to the elevator.
I think Finn is more than you can handle. You're just saying what you believe you're supposed to, given your personality. But that's why you moved on to Finn, rather than trying to keep your ex-wife and Finn both, isn't it?
Mark was quiet, and Gus got the impression he was staring at Jill.
Ah, so you're a shrink. A succubus shrink. Huh, that's definitely new and interesting,
Mark finally said.
Isn't it, though? I also have a degree in paranormal psychology. The real degree, mind you,
Jill added.
Excuse me, I need to go open the elevator.
Jill ran off ahead of them, bounding over the pile of corpses that included the colonel and heading for the elevator.
Oh, I like her. She seems fun,
said Mark, who promptly coughed, then cleared his throat. Gus didn't need to be a shrink to know Mark was trying to hide the fact that he was likely crying.
I knew you'd come,
Mark said suddenly, his voice cracking.
I just wasn't sure how fast it'd be. They did a lot to hide you, an awful lot, but there's no way I'd ever leave you behind.
Gus said, running into the elevator and standing next to Jill.
You're my brother and would-be husband, if I swung that way.
Laughing at that, Mark then let out a choked-off sob, followed by another sob he couldn't hide.
I love you,
Mark said softly.
No homo. I know. I love you too,
Gus said with a smirk. The elevator doors slid shut. Zipping upward, Gus expected there'd be quite a few people waiting for them, probably with weapons, which was why he detonated every single bomb he had planted at the same time before they reached their floor.
Oh, Gussie, were you a little angry that they took me?
Mark asked as everything began to shake, his voice still a bit emotional.
He was very angry,
Jill answered before Gus could say anything. Both she and Gus brought up their camouflage spell, cloaking themselves and Mark. Laughing at her comment, Mark sighed and then sniffled hard.
Yeah, I imagine he was.
The elevator doors opened onto a fiery inferno populated by screaming men running back and forth.
That looks about right for Gus's anger. Yeah,
Mark said rather casually. He'd apparently turned his head to look at what was going on.
Ready.
Setting off at a sprint, Gus burst out into the fires and flames. Dodging across broken equipment and bodies, he slammed into the door that led out and smashed it open. Not stopping, he set off at full speed, heading straight for the stairwell access that would get them back up to the top. Flying past him with a hard flap of her wings, Jill zipped ahead. Taking the corner at full speed, she hit the wall with her feet, dug in, and launched away down the hall, her wings snapping through the air as she did so.
Damn, Gus, she's impressive,
muttered Mark. Gus couldn't help but nod in agreement, even as he ran on. Turning the same corner Jill had, he entered the hallway that led into the security point just before the staircase. All three soldiers at the checkpoint were dead, laying on the ground with what looked like broken necks.
Did you fly into him?
Yes. I just let my wings and arms hit him behind the neck. It worked really well. I'm ready up here. Just get below me and hang on,
Jill said.
You've said that before.
I have, and you loved it. You'll love this too,
Jill promised. Storming into the stairwell, Gus stopped dead center in the middle of it. Glancing up, he found Jill looking down at him from one flight up.
I forgot about Mark. Oh well, this'll do,
said Jill. Jumping down, she got in front of him, wrapped her arms around his middle, and then rocketed upward, straight up the middle of the stairwell at full speed.
Holy shit!
Shrieked Mark as they ascended rapidly.
Hold on!
Yelled Jill as they kept gaining speed, heading straight up to the top of the staircase and not slowing down at all. With a boom, the top of the ceiling above the staircase blew apart and exploded out in every direction.
I can make fear bombs too!
Exclaimed Jill.
It worked!
Tucking her wings in as they zoomed through the blown-out ceiling, they burst out into broad daylight. Expanding her wings, followed by a quick spin, Jill halted their upward advance and landed them gracefully, only a few feet away from where Dunyasha stood on a disc.
Ah, Director Eric,
Dunyasha said and gestured with a hand.
I have a disc just for him, Gus. Just put him down on it, then step onto mine.
Nodding his head, Gus put Mark down on the blood disc.
Aw, I hate riding these,
Mark mumbled, then hunched around the disc, holding on to it.
Ready!
Gus stepped onto Dunyasha's disc and stuck an arm around her, pulling her up against his side.
By the way, I have to tender my resignation, Director Eric,
Dunyasha said as they pulled skyward.
Let me guess. You're going to be hired by Melody Locke,
grumped Mark when his disc rose as well.
Exactly,
Jill agreed as she soared by them, once more flying ahead.
Of course she is,
Mark lamented, almost to himself.
Of course she is.
Epilogue. Landing with a thump, Gus stepped off Dunyasha's disc and turned to look at Mark. Sliding off his own disc, he let out a deep sigh as his feet hit the ground, followed by a groan. He'd managed to stay upright, but it was obvious he was in pain.
"You know, I think it's time for me to retire," muttered Mark. "Do something that isn't so, well, this. I know the feeling,"
Gus muttered, turning to look at his friend. They were all standing at the entrance to Sam's building. He'd been assured several times that this location was well obscured. Landing as they had wouldn't cause any problems.
"Pretty sure Mel is gonna have us finding lost pets after everything that's happened."
"Oh, that sounds nice. Maybe Finn and I should open up a dog walking business or something,"
Mark said, putting one foot in front of the other in small steps. Dunyasha got to the front door and pulled it open. Jill was waiting at the bottom of the steps, watching for anyone nearby that might be heading their way, or spying on them. Before Mark could reach the door, Finn rushed out of it, wrapping her arms around him and holding him tight. Letting out a breath, Gus felt like he could finally relax. He'd done what he said he would when Mark walked him out of the desert, what he'd promised. Regardless of anything else, he had kept the one promise he'd refused to break, even over his own life. In that same breath, he released his stranglehold on his boogeyman shift, the constant regeneration of energy reserves he'd been burning just to keep himself going and fix all the damage he'd caused to himself on this mad chase. The world suddenly went dark all around him, falling away into nothing.
"It's just tired," Jill said to someone else. "At least from what I... Oh, he's awake!"
Opening his eyes, Gus found he was looking up at Melody and Trish. He felt like he was in a narrow bed. Not quite a hospital bed, but something similar.
"Am I in the infirmary, maybe?"
"See? Just tired,"
Jill said from somewhere off to his left.
"Hey,"
Gus said, grinning up at the two. Looking around the bed, he found Serafina, Chloe, Janelle, and Indali all staring at him.
Hey.
Indali grimaced at him, as did Serafina. Chloe, Janelle, and Trish all gave him a smile. Melody looked furious.
"Gustavus Wilhelm Hellstrom,"
Melody said in a dark and dangerous voice.
"You left me here with almost no information whatsoever. You didn't answer any of my calls or respond to a single one of my texts. You could have at least called me or...
Melody's voice trailed off as she took in a deep breath.
"He lost his phone almost as soon as we left,"
Jill offered before Melody could start again.
"It's somewhere between here and Finn's house." "What? Oh, I... Oh,"
Melody said, still looking very angry, but without a valid outlet.
"That would make sense,"
murmured Serafina.
"I couldn't get into your phone no matter which way I tried. It was as if it were blocked. More than likely, it's just destroyed somewhere."
"Exactly. And you're right, Mel,"
Gus said, reaching up to cup Melody's face in his left hand.
"You're absolutely right. I could have stuck around, given you more information, or found a phone or something somewhere. I honestly was just in full fight-or-flight mode. A lot of it is a bit of a blur in retrospect."
Melody nodded her head several times at that.
"Exactly! Exactly!"
she grumbled, both of her hands locked around his forearm. "Everyone is okay, though," Trish said, getting his attention. "Finn made it back, obviously. And you came with Mark. Your sister and her fiancé made it here as well."
"The Elven Nations are preparing for war,"
Janelle added from where she stood.
"I let them know the Originator was coming back. We've long held the belief that the world itself is dying, that its soul was missing. Knowing what we do now, telling them about the Originator seemed like the smart thing to do."
"Yeah, we'll be interested to see what they do,"
Chloe said with a laugh, then she let out a breath.
I've been doing the same thing, letting a lot of the vampire societies know about what's coming, that it's essentially the end of the world. Those who believe, they're all arming and getting ready.
Yes, I can't say I'm happy about all the guests,
said Sam as he entered from the doorway. He was accompanied by his son, Alex.
But what can I do? I do have to support my Eugenia, and anyone who's willing to carry a weapon and fight for her father, well, they're welcome, because the world really is dying. The gears and belts that have kept it turning are breaking down, or have already broken. Everything is crumbling.
That works in our favor, though,
Alex interjected.
The Silent One works ever harder to keep everything moving. Everything running, expending more and more of himself to do it. The Originator himself said that while he didn't expect to be gone from our world, this was still working towards the plan the Architect had come up with.
Architect?
Gus asked, not really wanting another named presence like that popping up.
That's what he called him,
Alex muttered.
But if I'm being honest, a lot of it was a bit of a jumble. I wasn't expecting... Yeah, it's a jumble.
Frowning, Gus was once again reminded of the fact that he couldn't really penetrate Alex's mind. Now, after having dealt with a few more psychers, he was fairly certain it wasn't something Alex was actively doing, either. It was something that had been done to him. Lowering his head back into the pillow, Gus let out a slow breath.
All right, everyone out. I'm staying with him as his personal nurse, Trish ordered with a wave of her hand.
Everyone here apparently knew better than to argue with Trish, even those who didn't know her as well, including Sam, Dunyasha, and Jill. Sighing, once everyone had left, Trish turned and looked at him. Then she gave him a tired smile.
Well, my turn to get you back to rights again,
murmured the Dryad.
It isn't as bad this time, thankfully, but it's still not great.
Gus could only smile and nod his head somewhat regretfully.
I'm going to go get a few things and arrange a larger bed for us to snuggle in. There's no way I'm crawling into that with you, since it looks like it barely fits you,
Trish said, gesturing at the narrow bed he was on.
Though, I find it interesting that you reverted back to your human disguise, as you call it, when you passed out. There's more of your father in you than you would believe. Maybe the best part, even if it's not as strong. I'll be right back. Just rest.
Trish patted him on the chest, then left the room as well. Closing his eyes, Gus laid there resting.
I would agree with her.
Knowing the voice the second he heard it, Gus felt his heart swell. Turning his head, he found his mother standing not far away. She was covered in blood, her clothes little more than tatters in her full boogeyman form. She looked as if she'd been run over by a bus, however. One side of her face was badly bruised. A black eye was swollen shut, and she had what looked like a broken arm.
There is a great deal of your father in you,
his mother said in a soft voice, hobbling closer to him.
And for that, I'm eternally grateful. You and your sister are all I have left of my husband. My Wilhelm.
Got your revenge?
Gus asked. He wasn't afraid of his mother dying at the moment. He knew she was far more resilient than he was. She was a full blood, after all. He imagined her regeneration through fear would have her back to rights in only a few months, without even a doctor's intervention.
No, I didn't. But what I did get, what was given to me, was a message, I think,
his mother said bitterly, coming to stand above him.
And maybe it was the message I needed to hear. Though I think part of it was for you as well.
Frowning, Gus watched his mother's face. She was lucid, coherent, and not what he was expecting at all.
I ran into someone who slapped me twice. And this is what he did to me with those two strikes, Jennifer murmured. He said he didn't wish to hurt me, but he needed answers. That they'd come first. Then he'd make my death swift. I was completely at his mercy.
Gus had a dark, troubling thought that this was the same man he'd called Steve, the one who'd later been identified as Seville.
And I was afraid. So I told him exactly why I was there,
Jennifer said, looking rather confused.
Then he just looked at me as if he knew me.
Standing there, his mother seemed to lose herself in her own thoughts.
Stared into me as if he understood my revenge completely and pitied me,
mumbled his mother.
He told me that revenge was like a wildfire in a forest. Everything is turned to ashes, and it burns out the good. He said to go home to my children, that if he had one wish, that would be what he would do.
I owe him twice, and I owe Alex, because it seems whatever I said to him bought my mother a get-out-of-jail-free card as well.
Then he turned to leave. Just before he left, he said that he had almost nothing left of himself, that waiting was all he had anymore, but that he was very tired, that he'd done all he could for the moment. Then he left.
Jennifer finished, her eyes moving back to Gus's.
The last part was for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I don't understand it either.
Gus admitted.
I'm glad you're all right, Ma.
Me too. Glad to see your sister is safe here. Though, I'm amused that it's that same incubus who's sheltering us. I shall go speak to him about my expectations as a married woman with children, one of whom isn't married yet.
He said he could reach out to Dad and Ness,
Gus added hopefully. With any luck, it'd cool his mother down.
Did he now? Then I really must go have a conversation with him. I'll not let my husband slip away from me that easily,
Jennifer said with a smile that was both predatory and disturbing.
Your father ran me down at the start. But I suppose that just means I have to run him down afterward.
Waving her hand at him, his mother vanished from view, disappearing into nothing.
Your mother is, intense. I'm not looking forward to introducing myself,
Jill said with some trepidation.
Trish is going to enter in a few seconds. I'm just waiting outside in case you need anything. You should sleep. We'll talk more later.
Right.
Watching the news, Gus couldn't quite believe it. There wasn't a single word about anything that had happened. Given the amount of carnage that had occurred on the freeway, he'd been reasonably sure someone would talk about it.
It's not completely sunk,
Mark said from where he was sitting on the couch. Next to him was Finn.
I mean, I'm not even sure the Fed could push this kind of thing down.
No, most certainly not, Finn agreed. This is the government itself. They're smothering this. And that's not good.
No, it isn't,
Melody said, laying her head down on Gus's shoulder.
But that's okay, because we're done with this silliness. You can do it on your own, Dad. We're just mortals here.
Miles waved a conciliatory hand at her.
I understand. I wouldn't ask any more of you,
Miles agreed.
Besides, we found out Kit and Lily are immortal so long as they don't run into someone like Seville, Skipper, Shirley, or Claire. Are those names I should be concerned about? Mark asked.
He'd readily adapted to everything that they told him about the world and about what was really happening, and likely why he was targeted. Finn and Mark had both not bothered to check in with the Fed. They were letting everyone believe they were dead and gone for the time being.
Not particularly. It's unlikely you'll ever run into them unless you join the fight,
Miles admitted, leaning sideways into the recliner he was in.
Seville was terrifying,
Gus murmured, shaking his head.
He couldn't have been that bad, could he?
Melody asked, lifting her head up to look at him.
Yes, he really is,
Miles said softly.
I've had quite a few run-ins with him. Sometimes he seems almost reasonable. Sometimes.
Show me?
Melody asked, staring into Gus's eyes. Chewing at his lip, he didn't see a problem with it. Recalling the full episode with Seville, he pushed it into her mind. Melody visibly flinched, hunching into herself partly.
Heavens! And that's Seville?
Melody asked in a subdued voice.
And he's the one who caught Jennifer?
Yeah,
Gus said, nodding his head, looking back to the news. A flaming building came up on the screen. Smoke was pouring out of it into the sky.
Still on fire, despite their best attempts to put it out. Fire departments from all over the capital are rolling onto the scene,
said the newscaster.
Well, with any luck, he won't be our problem. He never goes after anyone, and typically only shows up afterward,
said Miles.
I don't hate him. He's done me personally no ill, but he's certainly killed a number of the originators chosen. People I knew, even if they weren't friends.
Anyway,
Mark said, then clapped his hands together. Turning, he looked at Melody and Gus.
Pregnant yet? My son is gonna need a Campbell wife. Campbell seemed to run things. Or is Trish the more likely candidate? Trish?
Turning his head, Mark looked toward the back of the family room. Trish, Janelle, Jill, and Dunyasha were busy playing some type of game that involved dice. Serafina, Chloe, and Dolly were hunched around a laptop in the other room. He could just see them through the archway.
Yes, Mark?
Trish asked, not looking away from the game.
Pregnant yet? My son is gonna need a wife. You're not a Campbell, but you're just as scary sometimes.
Oh, most certainly I'm pregnant,
Trish said with a soft chuckle, scooping up the dice.
It's what we dryads do best. I can't promise a wife to your son, though. He'd have to earn any of my children. They will likely be very headstrong like their father.
That does make sense, I guess. I mean, she did mention that several times. That getting pregnant was literally what her kind did. They could just stall it until they wanted it or were ready for one.
Aw, I wish I could do that. It's getting harder and harder to not want a Russian ovum down to your seed,
Jill added.
A pity I simply cannot get pregnant,
Indali chimed in.
Though I do believe we could fashion our own construct. That'd be rather nice. Perhaps a nice automatic pistol? A PDW? Ooh, an SMG?
Ooh, what about a rifle? I'd be delighted to handle your child and would take very good care of him, just as an aunt should,
Jill countered.
I see. Well, I guess I'll just have to start working him from the get-go. I promise he'll be worthy,
Mark said, nodding his head. Then he looked at Finn.
Just in case, let's have a daughter after this. I guarantee any daughter of yours could capture a boy from Gus. He'd have double the luck. If I was a woman, he'd be my husband, and you're beautiful, intelligent, sexy, and stunning. No man can resist you, dearest.
Raising her eyebrows at that, Finn blushed a faint shade of red and smiled at him.
Well, it's crazy, it's wild, but it's all family, and I couldn't think of being anywhere else.
Melody slid her hand down Gus's pants and then leaned into him, biting at his neck.
Ooh, let's go get pregnant. I want a son so he can have Finn and Mark's daughter,
she hissed in a driven voice. Glancing at the contractor, he saw that her indigo and red contracts were glowing as brightly as if he were staring into the sun itself.
Now,
she demanded, squeezing his family jewels gently. There was no room for argument, because Melody was certifiable, but she was his love.
This has been Swing Shift 3, written by William D. Arend, performed by Andrea Parsnow. Copyright 2020 by William D. Arend. Production copyright 2021 by William D. Arend. The End.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.